So I went to Chicago, and I started to find boilers there. And I stuck around there for a while, and finally I see that wasn't going to work out, and so I went to Montana and started working in the mines.
How long did you stay in Montana?
I was there from 4 years.
About what year was that, Jack? Do you recall that?
Well, it was 1903 and 4 and up to the 1950 year. I was there 2 years and a half in Montana.
And from Montana, where did you go?
I came up here.
Well, where did you first, when you were in British Columbia, before you even got into...
Well, I come up here in 95.
95.
I landed in Juneau of the 14th of July, 1895.
1895.
And that winter, Joe Goldsmith and I went into the Outback country. We started out, we had 9 dogs and 1,500 pounds of stuff. And we double-tripped it and triple-tripped it. And we got into beyond Dalton's Post in there on the shorter creek. And we prospected there that, well, so springtime, and then we turned around and come back out to Chilcat again.
Then from Chilcat, where did you go back?
Well, then the next summer, I run on to Jack Dalton. He was packing stuff into his post in the Outback.
Is this the same Jack Dalton that the Dalton Trail's named after?
That is. He's got a son here. Jim Dalton, the engineer, Jack Dalton's son.
Is he here in Fairbanks?
No, he lives out here in the crowd, about a mile north of the college out here.
Is that right?
I was out there Sunday night, last Sunday night, at dinner. Well, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, we had an hour, I had a partner, and we went back into the, was going back into the Outback, into this Shorty Creek country the next summer. That is the summer of 96, you see. And, Dalton was packing his stuff in, of course, we kind of sewed in together, and I helped him on the pack train, and he helped us get into the post there, you see. And my partner got hurt. And I stayed there with him for about a week, and then we started, after he got a little better, we went back to Juneau again. And then 97, while Dalton brought those cattle in, and we come in over the trail with the cattle to it.
Oh, now, Jack, you're speaking of this Dalton, the Dalton Trail. Now, just which way did he go when he made that trail, and where was his destination?
Well, when we started out with the cattle, we left Pyramid Harbor. That's Chilcat.
Yeah.
For the mouth of Chilcat River. And we went into to his post in there, on the head of the Outside. And then we was headed for Carmack. And we was going to raft the cattle from there down the river. But when they got the Hoochie Eye, a couple of lakes in there, about 3 days travel from Carmack, where the Yukon was low, and we had the Rink Rapids to contend with, you see, to get on them with that raft of cattle.
Yeah.
And so instead of going to Carmack, we went to Selkirk. We stayed on the land side and went down to Selkirk, and that's where we built the raft and been done with the first load of cattle, you see.
Well, now, that Dalton Trail, is that, it was from, where did it start? It started from...
Well, it started from, really started from Chilcat.
Chilcat.
Pyramid Harbor, you see.
Yeah, where was the, where did it end at?
Well, it ended at, you might say at Selkirk.
Yeah, that's where it started.
Yeah.
Well, you made this raft for the cattle, and what year was that?
That was 97.
97. Yeah. And did you get down the river to Dawson?
Landed there with a raft of cattle on the 14th day of August.
1897.
That is the first beef cattle that was brought into the Dawson country, you see.
Well, now in 1897, Jack, the Dawson Stampede hadn't started full speed ahead yet, had it?
Well, no.
No.
The stampede started in the first bull came out in 96, you see.
Well, that first gold, that come out of 40 Mile, didn't it?
No, come out of that. From well, I guess some of it did, but yeah. The most of it come out of Dawson.
Oh. And, well, anyway, you got down with the cattle all right, you don't
got down with a rack load of cattle.
Yeah, well, Jack, did you get in on any ground there in the early days?
Well, I staked the claim on O'Neill Gulch.
Where's that located?
That's up above, it's up about, comes in about 18 above on Bonanza.
Oh, yeah.
But I was too late, you see. I fooled around all summer with them confounded cattle, you know, and when they got in there, putting everything was staked, you see. That is all the cricks are staked.
Yeah.
Well, I went up on this O'Neill Gulch and staked the crick away up in there, you know, and you only had a right to stake one crick in each district, you see. And then there's all those hills there, it was a little open, and I couldn't go and stake one of them, and I didn't know how, you know. I didn't have the know-how to do it, you know. But anyhow, I missed all around on the staking.
Yeah, well, Jack, did you meet any of those real early-day miners in there, like Carmack or Ledoux or McDonald, any of those
fellas? I met all of those fellas.
Met them all?
Yeah.
And McQuestion?
Well, yes, McQuestion. No one, I think McQuestion had gone out. But I met Mrs. McQuestion. She was down at the 40 Mile. That's where he was, you know,
yeah.
The 40 Mile.
And that was in the year of 1897.
Well, I met them in 97, but when I knew McQuestion was after I went down to the 40 Mile country, you see.
Oh, I see. Well, Jack, then your mining venture at that time didn't turn out too good, is that it?
Well, I got in in October of 97, I got a lay on 16 above on Bonanza, me and my partner, Mike McHale. And we worked all winter there from October till June. And my partner got the scurvy and went to the hospital. Well, I finished cleaning up the dumps and got everything all squared up, and then I went and I bought a claim on French Hill. And I just missed it there. I did find a $10 nugget in the ground that I bought, you see.
Yeah, now, Jack, excuse me. So some of these boys coming into the country later, we won't call them sea choppers, but I guess that's what you call them. I mean, it's coming later years.
Yeah.
Now, you say that you prospected this ground and you took out some of that ground from October to the springtime. Is that correct?
Well, the ground that I worked on in the winter was, Lee had a lease on it.
Yeah, you mined it in the winter.
Yeah, in the winter.
Yeah.
Drifted it with wood fire.
And you brought this dirt up and put it in a hopper and...
On top.
And then cleaned it up in the spring.
Put the big, had a big dump. We had 20,000 buckets of dirt in the dump there.
Hmm.
10-pan buckets.
Now
and then when the water come, why, we shovel that in, you see.
Yeah, I see. Well, what I was going to say, Jack, in them days there was no such a thing as these hoists around there, steam hoists.
No, there was no steam hoist there.
And that was all done by windmill?
All done with a windmill.
Bucket.
Bucket.
And how deep was that ground?
About 16 feet.
That wasn't too bad.
No, that wasn't bad at all.
And how far was it tunneling from the shaft at that time?
Well, we worked out a piece of ground there, about 50 feet square.
50 feet square.
Yeah.
Did you have to put in a square set, timber it up?
Nothing, there's no timber in it, there was just a little cribbing around the top of the shaft.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, wasn't some of that dangerous, some of those slabs fall?
Well, no.
No?
No, it was perfectly safe as far as anything like that.
It was frozen ground?
All frozen solid,
yeah.
Know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, the only thing we had to contend with that winter, we run into a water pocket. Where it had froze all around, you know, and created the pressure there, and it wouldn't freeze anymore, you see.
Oh, I see.
Well, we tapped that. Well, we had a little trouble there bailing that out. But after we got that out, we had no more trouble with water, you know.
Yeah, well, then, Jack, the following spring of 98, then did you stay around Dawson, or where did you go then?
Well, in the winter of 98, this man Dalton's brother had a claim on Gold Hill. And I timbered up a shaft there for him, cribbed it up, you know, 65 feet deep.
Now, what creek was that?
That is on Gold Hill.
Oh, Gold Hill,
yeah.
That's over near Hunker Creek.
No, it's right there at the mouth of Bonanza.
Oh, yeah.
And not Bonanza, but the mouth of El Dorado.
That's right.
That's the junction there between El Dorado and Bonanza.
That's
see?
Right. And you cribbed up this shaft and worked there for Dalton, is that it?
Well, I cribbed the shaft up, and then after everybody left, I got in there and done a little sniping, and then I went on down to Norman that summer. I went to Norman.
Oh, you went to Norman.
Yeah.
What year was that?
That's 98.
No,
that is as 99.
Now,
hold on a minute now. It was 1900 that I went down to know.
1900?
Yeah.
Well,
that is, I went down there to stay.
Yeah. Well, Jack, 1900, Nome was quite a mining camp.
Oh, gee whiz, yes.
How many people do you figure was around and down on the beach there and around the vicinity of Nome and then?
Oh, it must have been 300-400 people there.
300?
Working on the beach.
Yeah.
Besides the other people back in the hills there on Bonanza, or on the Anvil and Dexter and...
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a lot of those boys went out there with big stakes, wasn't there?
There sure was.
Well, Jack, I suppose in them days you was probably familiar with some of the characters of Rex Beach's book, The Spoilers, weren't
you? Yes, I knew Rex Beach.
And did you know any characters in his book, The Spoilers?
Well, I knew most of them, yeah.
Like the judge and Terry Malote?
Yeah, I knew the whole outfit of them.
That was quite a story, wasn't it?
It was quite a story.
Well, some of that was taken right from life, wasn't it?
A lot of it was, yeah. This judge, you know, and Joe Woods and the gang that was... There was a conspiracy on down there, you see, to keep that ground. That is, this bunch was after the ground, the McKenzie gang, you see.
Yeah.
And Noyes and Joe Woods and those fellas, well, they all were... When they got into Lane's ground down there, and he went to Frisco and took them all down to Frisco and put them in jail down there, you see. Noyes and a whole bunch of them. Well, those fellas was, there was characters around Nome there. You see them every day, you know.
Yeah. Well, how long did you stay in Nome, Jack?
I was there, I was 1903. I was there 3 years.
And is there any other event that... did it to your mind now that happened down there at that time that'd be nice to put on this recording? Or?
Well, there was one thing. You know, it's a kind of a, quite a long story, you know, to make it, if it makes sense. But boys and that element with Mackenzie King and those fellas, they was in there to rob the country and rob everybody, you see. Which they did up to the point when they got into Lane's ground.
Well, who was this fellow Lane?
Well, Charlie Lane, he's a big mining man from California, you know. He's a wealthy man.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyhow, Lane went down to Frisco, and he brought a little man back with him, and this little man, he was a deputy, you know.
What was his name, you recall?
I don't remember what his name was. But anyhow, I had a butcher shop in Rome. My brother and I had a butcher shop up on Stedman Avenue, and the shop was right alongside the courthouse. Well, this little man come up there to the courthouse, and he wanted to come into the butcher shop. We just opened up in the morning there. He wanted to know if we knew Mackenzie. Well, Mackenzie just been in the shop and got a steak and took it over to the Golden Gate Hotel to have it cooked, you see. And we told him that Mackenzie was just in there and just went over to the hotel. Well, he went over there, and just as he went over, Mackenzie was coming out of the kitchen. And the little fella told him who he was and arrested him. Well, Mackenzie, he was horrified to think that anybody had the power to arrest him, you see. And so anyhow, the little fella had the papers and everything, and so Mackenzie wanted to go down and see the commanding officer. He went down to the commanding officer and showed him his papers, and the commanding officer told King, he says, you'll have to go to Frisco, he says. Well, I says, I'll go too if this man wants me to.
Excuse me, Jack. Now, this commanding officer, was a company of soldiers?
They were there to protect this Mackenzie outfit, you see. They were all in together there, that crowd was, you see.
Is that right? Well, yes. These soldiers you speak of, are they United States, what kind of soldiers were they?
Well, they were regular soldiers, you
regular
know.
Regular soldiers?
And the commander, and they had a barracks and everything there, you know.
But they were in on this deal.
Well, I couldn't swear that they were, but everything showed up that way, you see.
You mean the commander, he might have been in on it, you think?
Well, I don't know. I think he was myself.
Yeah.
And everybody else had been so, too, you know.
Well, then what happened, Jack?
Well, anyhow, Mackenzie never got people. They took the judge and the prosecuting attorney and one or two more of those fellas. And took him aboard the boat. Well, then he wanted the gold dust. And there was three express wagons loaded with gold dust that he took out of the bank there, and they took that to Frisco the same time that he took the judge and McKenzie.
Now, you say they, who do you mean? You talking about McKenzie taking it, or this little man?
This deputy.
Oh, this deputy. He must have been the United States deputy
he
marshal.
He was the United States deputy marshal, and he had the authority to take it out, you see.
Is that right? And yeah. What do you figure the... Would be the approximate wealth of the gold.
Well, I don't know. I know there was three wagon loads of it. All the one horse express wagon that carried. You know.
Well, it must have been several hundred thousand, maybe.
There was probably, maybe 2 tons of gold dust, you see.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Yeah. Well, then what happened, Jack?
Well, he took them down to Frisco and they tried them down there and they got terms, you see.
They all found guilty.
And President McKinley come from Washington to California and pardoned them.
The whole bunch,
yeah.
Well, how come that they got that pardon?
I don't know. But
must have been, the President, McKinley, the United States President at that time?
Yeah, the President McKinley.
He pardoned these fellows.
And he pardoned them, and they were some of the big shots up in Washington that had been on this deal that had influence enough to send McKinley over there and pardon them, you see.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Of course, that's bygone.
Oh, sure, it's called bygone.
Bygone history. Well, now, Jack, now to get back to, you left Nome in 1903, you said?
1903.
Where'd you go then?
Fairbanks.
You come here, what time in 1903?
Oh, I guess about July.
July 1903. What did you do when you come here? Did you get in on any of the early day ground around here?
No. I did stake one claim over on Fairbanks Creek, but I never done anything with it. It was up on the rocks.
Oh?
Everything was staked when I got here again, you see. It was too late.
In 1903?
Yeah.
Well, you must have known many of the early day men. You knew E.T. Barnett, did you?
Yes, I knew Barnett and Wickersham and...
Wickersham?
Roden and... Oh, Tom Markham and all those fellas.
Right, and let's see, there were many others. You probably knew Pedro.
Yes, I knew Felix Pedro and Mrs. Pedro. And
did you know Frank Clary?
I did.
And probably Jimmy Funchin over there.
Yes, I remember Jimmy Funchin as well as yesterday.
Those boys were the
real
early stampeders in the years of,
1902
and
3
and around in there.
Well, they come from Circle, you know. Most of those boys come across from Circle.
They were, Yukon pioneers in that country at that time.
Yeah, they were the really early pioneers, you see.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, now, Jack, then did you go into a little business here for yourself?
Well, when I landed here, I figured on prospecting, you see. But there's a fellow down there known that I used to live with down there, the Iceman, Jim Schwartzel. He sent me a lot of ice tools up here. They come up on the boat. I didn't know they was a coming, but come down to the boat here, and here's a bunch of a plow and two tongs and the whole outfit was built to me here, and I went into the ice business.
In other words, you was the first ice man here, was
it? Well, there was another fellow started about the same time, Mitchell. The fellow named Mitchell. He had some ice up here.
And
we started at the same time.
Yeah. Well, how did you do with it when you first started? Did you make out all right?
Well, I'd done pretty good, yes.
Well, Jack...
And then I hauled wood, too, you know.
Yeah. Well, now, when was the first... when was the town incorporated here? You recall that? First mayor and council they had and whatever?
Well, now, the town was incorporated the year before, I think, before I got up here. 1902, I think it was. Now, I wouldn't be sure about that.
I don't hardly think it's 1902. I think it might have been 3.
Well, maybe it was 3.
Yeah, I kind of think so. Well, anyway, getting back to... you recall who the first mayor was?
Well, sir, there was no mayor.
Well, Jack...
They didn't elect the mayor. You see, they had the election, and whoever got the most votes...
He kind of acted...
Well, he was supposed... It was a matter of honor. You know, give him the chair,
you see. Well, wasn't you mixed in the council at one time?
I was on 2 years on the council here.
Yeah, I remember when I was
just a kid. I remember you was a kid when you was a bushing for me around here. I remember that. Well, said I was only white man that was in town. He was running around the hall.
Didn't you one time get the high vote and kind of, you was an acting mayor?
Well, I got 113 votes, more than any of them, but they wouldn't give me the chair.
Why?
Well, I don't know. They didn't like my way of doing things.
Well, but then you sit on the council at that time.
Yeah, I was on the council.
Well, later, do you recall who became the first mayor officially when they run for mayor?
Well, sir, I don't know. But it was after 1910.
After 1910?
Yeah.
That they had the first mayor.
That they elected their mayor, you see. And I'm not so sure, but was it Sam Bonifield?
Yeah, I kind of think it was myself. Yeah. I can remember right. Well, you know Sam too, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I knew Sam and Juno were all the years ever committed at all.
Sam was he's the man who started the First National Bank.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was quite a gambler.
He was one of the greatest poker players that ever come to the country.
Yeah, I know. He played with some notorious characters in that business, like Tex Rickard and Louis Golden and many more that I just... I'd have to stop and think about it.
Yeah. And then there was gamblers from Missoula and Helena come in here to break Bonifield, you see, and by God, Bonifield skinned them all, you know.
Well, that's where he got his start.
Well, no.
Didn't he get his start? I thought he got his start.
He opened up a mine in Juneau, and he went about $10,000 in the hole, you see. And he went to Circle. And I guess he played pokers with the miners down there, and he got money enough, and he set up an office, and he paid everybody that he owed and that he could find.
That must have been in the early, along 96, along in there, 97.
Well, it was about 90...
Might have been 98.
97 or 98.
Yeah.
Well, then when Tarbanks was struck, he come down here, and Frank Manley put up the money of the $50,000 in gold dust, and he started the First National Bank.
What year was that?
1905, I think.
1905. Yeah. Well, how did Dick Woods come in on the deal?
Well, I don't know how Dick got in.
I know.
You know, there was after Sam trying to break him, you see. Barnett, he went belly up, and Washington Lasky went Chloe, and there was after Sam, but Sam was... He loaned Ben and Manley when he started the hot spring down here. Sam let him have too much money, you see.
Yeah.
And so the Barrys, they come in here and they put up the gold dust.
Yeah.
So that the money was still there.
Yeah. Well, how did Sam Bonifield finally leave here?
Well, Sam was in pretty bad shape. His mind was bad, you see.
Oh.
And, he went outside and he went down to in Missouri someplace, and he got into another bank down there. And later on, he was in Seattle, and he and his sister were going across the street there, and there's a fellow run into him with an automobile and killed both of them.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's
poor
what.
Sam.
That's where he wound up.
Well, now. You were here at the time Barnett was mixed in this bank, and the bank went kind of up, went through bankruptcy, didn't it?
Well, it just went through. Barnett loaded up the money onto a double ender and headed for Circle.
Well,
he got by with it, too.
Well, wasn't there one or two that went after him and got their money back?
There was a fellow went after him with a shotgun.
And he gave the guy his money.
He gave the guy his money up on this Eagle Summit there.
Do you know who the name of the man was?
Don't remember, no.
Well, I was told it was Frank Gone. You remember Frank Gone?
Well, I guess maybe it was.
Yeah, yeah. You remember him? He was the father of the Gone kid that used to mush dogs around here in the very early days.
Mm-hmm.
And, but anyway, Barnett, he finally got over to Circle and got out of the country with some of that money, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
And then the story went, as I heard it many years ago, that he got down into Mexico.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And they never did get him out of
it. The Jessens was down there in Mexico, too, you know. They got a lot of land down there, you know, through fraud or something that way. They had a little money, you know, went down there and got in on a lot of that good land.
Well, then the creditors of the bank try to get him out of Mexico to get some of their money?
No. You see, old John Barrick, he had about $30,000 in there, and the fellas that had the big money in there, well, he'd give it back to them, you see.
After he left here, you mean?
Well, I don't know what that is in the deal. But anyhow, when there wasn't anybody that had any money, only the little depositors, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but he never returned that.
They never anybody got any of that back. I don't, not that to my knowledge, anyhow.
Well, Barnett, he went down into Mexico, and I guess he must be dead now.
Oh, yes. Yes, he's been dead quite a while.
And I guess Frank Clary has also passed away.
I guess so.
Yeah, I seen Frank some years ago down on the Skid Road there in Seattle.
Yeah.
Down and off.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Man who had $1 million one time, Mr. Clary.
Yeah.
I kind of think the Barnett kind of got in on that because they were brother-in-law. Remember you call them?
I know.
Yeah.
Well, Barnett was married to one of the Clarys. They were from Helena. They were from Helena. I knew them in Helena before we come up here.
Yeah. Well, then you, in the early days, how long did you stay here in Fairbanks, Jack?
I was here 7 years.
7 years, and then when you left here, where'd you go?
I went to 40. I went to the 41.
You went to the 40 mile. Mm-hmm.
I went outside and went around for a year or so, and then I come back into the 40 mile. And it was over there over in the early 30s I come back here. I was gone 21 years anyhow from here.
21 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. Yeah. And then you acquired a little property on Chicken Creek.
Well, I had claims over there, you know. And
did you
put in most of the time prospecting, sniping on the river, and.
Well, did you do a little active mining?
Well, I was mining. That's the way I made my living over there, you see.
Sniping.
On the river.
Yeah, but do you use a rocker on that? Or
yeah.
A rocker?
Yeah.
Well, is there very many old-timers left over there now, Jake?
There's only three people left in the country over there. Well, I say three. There's Wilkie, and his wife is over there, and George Robinson is over there.
Oh, George Robinson, he's an old-timer, yeah.
Yeah. Well, then there's a Siebert Colon. And his wife, and Vitale, a man by the name of Vitale. He's watching on the drudge over there.
Oh, yeah.
Them are the only people there is in the... Well, I believe there is somebody living down at the north of O'Brien. I think there's a party.
The real old-timers you're speaking of.
Well, yeah, they
yeah. Well, then, after you left Chicken, you come back here to Fairbanks, and you've been residing here ever since, right?
Well, I figure I'm putting them in the winter here, and being nobody over there, you know, I don't like to be alone anymore, you see.
No.
Because when I was able to get out and trap and chase around and cut wood and all this kind of stuff, well, you could pass the time away pretty well. But when you get so you can't hit the ball anymore, why, get monotonous.
Yeah. Jack, how old are you now?
I'll be 91 years, the 7th day of this coming April.
That's a good age. Yeah. 91 years old.
10th
of April, 1961.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was born in 70.
Well, that's, you got quite a history, and you're one of the real old-timers, Jack. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you and get this information on our pioneer recording, so it'll be nice for these future pioneers coming up and posterity to keep such records. And thank you very much for coming here. And
I have a few questions before you finish.
Well, I made a trip. When I come from Nome up here, like this, it's kind of interesting. Bishopric and Bain brought a merchandise outfit up here, you know. And I bought a ticket. There was about 12 or 15 of us bought tickets on their boat, you see. They had a steamer called the Independence. And when they got over to St. Michael's, where the scow was buried in the sand, and we had to dig that out and cork it and fix it up and get it aboard, you know. Then when they got on the boat, they had no crew. Only an engineer and the captain.
Do you remember the names of some of those crews?
Well, I remember Captain Bain. Yes. And the fellow named Preston, he was the mate. That was the only officers there was on the boat, you see. And he turned everything over to us, paid the passengers, you see.
I'll mention some names and see if you remember them. Do you remember Barnett's partner, A.J. Goddard, he had the first steamboat on Lake LaBarge.
Yes,
do you remember them?
I remember Goddard, yes.
Can you tell me anything about them?
No, I can't.
Well, they were personal friends of mine in the States.
They were.
They told me about the country here before I ever come up here when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought maybe by seeing some of these pictures, you might remember some things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are pictures that were taken in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
That's over in Dawson City from Midnight Dome, and maybe you can remember something from seeing the pictures.
Well,
you?
I'd have to get my glass to see. I can't see a darn thing on that. Well, I was going to tell you. When we got up all about Keltag there, where the river is all in one big river. We loaded up with wood. And the night watchman, this little fellow named Anderson, he used to run the laundry over here later on.
Yeah, I know him.
Well, anyhow, he was the night watchman. Well, I was one of the pilots on the boat, you see. And the captain, I was... Jimmy Drummond had bought the blueberries off the Indians, and he made a bunch of blueberry pie, and always having a hell of a time to get something to eat on the boat, you know. And so I was down in the hole there eating blueberry pie, and in the meantime, they'd loaded up wood and just filled everything full of wood. You know, and you had to go around on the tow line, you know, to get around the end of the wood pile, you see. And this Anderson fell overboard. Well, the captain, he seen him when he went over, you see, and he tooted the whistle, and I was having my underclothes on, you know, and I just got out of bed and went down into those blueberry pies. And there's a little bit of an Indian canoe. A little bit of a thing, you know, and I set that over the side, and I got into it, and I, midnight, you know, dark. And I drifted down, and I kept a hollering at him. I couldn't dig me where he was. I couldn't see anything, you know, but I kept telling him I was coming to hang on, or, you know. And so finally I spotted him, you know, and he had a stick of wood under his arm that he held on to.
One of these cordwood sticks.
One of those cordwood sticks that pulled out of the pile, you see, when he went around there. And they got him ashore, they got him aboard, and you know, there wasn't, everybody was sore at one another and everything else. We wasn't getting nothing to eat, and there was nothing to drink, and nothing. And by golly, when I got aboard there, I'll bet you there was a dozen bottles stuck under my nose. Everybody wanted me to have a drink, but they were picking that fellow up.
Well, Jack, did you have to get in the water to do it?
No. No, in this little boat, you know, it wouldn't. And he got a hold of the end of the paddle, and I held him off. I told him, now, I said, if you try to get in the boat, we're both drowned. And I said, you just hang on to that paddle, and the boat will be back down here. The boat back down, you know, and pick us up. Then the next day, there was a dog jumped over, and I went over after him. We had quite a time coming up here.
Well, you finally got up with the boat.
Oh, yes, we got up the chimney, and everything was fine, you know.
Well, what year was that now?
Well, I think it was 1903.
Yeah.
It is the year that the big stampede was in here.
Yeah, that was 1903 at the
time. Yeah, that's the time.
Now, is there anything else you'd like to ask, Jack?
Well, if you can remind me to get some names of some of these people. Does he remember some of them around here by name?
Right.
What's the boat?
Well, what's the boat? Well, did you remember Captain McCann?
I did.
And did you know any several of those, the Green boys?
Yes, Jack Green.
Danny Green. Well, Danny, he had a store later down in Hot Springs, but there was George Green.
George and Jack and
yeah,
there were three brothers.
That's right. Well, they were early day pilots.
And then there was the,
Well, it was Newcomb.
Oh, yes, I remember Newcomb.
And, there's many, many. Well, there's did you remember old Cap Gray?
Yes, I certainly do.
Yeah,
he was on the panel, though.
That's right, yeah, Cap Gray. And then, did you ever remember Oliver? Pilot Oliver, he was one of the early day pioneers, and that pioneering the Yukon by boat, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, I think I remember Oliver.
Yeah, and, there's so many,
Then there's the Barrington. You remember the Barrington?
Oh, yeah. Wasn't he on the Keene, the Barrington?
Yeah, they were on they were on the Yukon, too, you know.
Sid Barrington.
There was two or three of the Barrington boys,
yeah.
And three of them, I think.
Yeah.
And they were real rivermen, too, believe me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was a Bailey that was on the upper river there. He was a real riverman. And there's Ben Moore, old Captain Moore, he was located at the town side of Skagway, you know.
Oh, yeah. And then Moore's Wharf was named after him.
Yeah.
Yeah, say, did you know old Cap Mayo? Cap Mayo, you know,
I know who you mean.
After he quit steamboating, he lived at Rampart.
Yeah, I remember him.
He came in the very early.
He was one of the real early ones.
That's right.
Yeah. See, when I come to, when Goldsmith and I was going in on the Alsac in the winter of 95, we come on the steamer Rustler, was headed for Haines. But we got blowed in at Skagway. I was there about 3 days on account of the storm, you see. And, of course, we were such young thugs, we went ashore, you know, and there's nothing but big timber, great, great big timber, you know, way back up in there for 2-3 miles, you know. And this old Captain Moore, he had a little cabin in there, and he had a town site located there, you see. Well, then I went on, after we went on over to Haines, and Goldsmith and I went into the Alsac, the Shorty Creek, and got mixed up with Dalton and went in with the cattle, and in 99, I come out of the left Dawson and went outside. And we went as far as Bennett on the boat, you see. And then got on the railroad that had been built in the meantime, you see. We went down into that town on the railroad, down there was that big town, all timber all gone, and the buildings, hotels, and saloons, and houses, and everything.
Well, say, Jack, do you recall getting back to this Moore? The Moore's Wharf was named after him.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, he married one of these Chilcat maidens, if you recall. Native woman.
Yeah.
And as time went on, why, when the white people come in there, why, I was just a kid, but I remember part of it. Mm-hmm. He figured he'd divorce that Native woman and marry some young white woman.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And there was some big ballyhoo where he couldn't divorce her. You remember
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I can't recall now, but I think that he just stayed with the first wife until she died.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember?
Well, now I don't remember what ever become of Moore, but I remember about the trying to get a divorce from her and wanting to get rid of her, you know.
And couldn't do it.
They couldn't do it. Couldn't do it.
Well, anyway, you know, Bobby Sheldon and I got a picture. Bobby and I selling papers. Gangway in 98.
Yeah.
Dave Toby Smith, you know.
Yeah.
That's a picture.
Well, you see, when now Bobby, you know, he's telling a bunch down there the other night from meeting it. But he knew me in Skagway, and I was a packing a gun around there, you know, for Soapy Smith, I guess.
I figured he was one of the vigilantes or something like that.
Well, that's what he thought.
Yeah,
but then I was in Dawson all this time.
You belong to the Dawson Order.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
You don't?
No, I never did.
Well, we take you up there this summer. We're all together, and you join that.
Yeah.
Well,
but Bobby, I hate
a minute here on this tape.
I hated to call Bobby down, you know. Damn it, he's a good fellow, you know.
Oh, well, that's all right. He meant no harm. But
don't leave her. It's
me,
you know.
He kind of figured that you was a member of the vigilantes.
Yeah,
you
know? I know.
That's
the yeah. Yeah.
He didn't figure he was
well, they just put Sophie on the commission, and when I'd come back down, then, the time I got there.
I'm only a few seconds more on the tape. Let me ask you this, and I'll turn the reel. Does he understand that these are Pioneer Igloo 4 tape recordings, and can we use these for reproduction in our historical papers and magazines?
You sure can.
Now, the Tanna Yukon Historical Society is going to set up their first issue.
Yeah.
And in editing this, if we can use it, can we have your permission on using this?
Well, sure.
I've got to think a little ahead on everything I do.
I know.
And we're supposed to, for legality, get it in writing.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Young here, and yourself, and myself, we're in good faith, but we have to protect you against somebody else that might misuse it.
I see.
Now, you understand that?
I understand.
Okay.
Well, anyway, it's been nice.